Hollywood is rated LGBT radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to Rated LGBT Radio, and I am your host, Rob Watson. This show, obviously, we obviously tape it at a certain time and place when we do a show, and then it is available for podcast on an ongoing basis, and people will listen to a lot of our podcasts a year, 2 years after we have recorded it. This show is being recorded on a day that is historic. Just minutes ago, New York grand jury indicted former President Donald Trump on felony charges. The charges are currently sealed, but may imminently be unsealed, so we will understand the details. But if you're listening to this podcast in the future, there you go. We've just identified the exact moment when this podcast took place. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that indictment because we have one of the country's great legal minds as a guest, just by coincidence. And so I think it'll be sort of like trying not to talk about it. But I'm sure we will address it at some point during the show. The real topic of our show, we've got a couple of hot topics going on. Also fixed in history, if you're listening to the show at a later date, is a horrible shooting that happened this week in Nashville, Tennessee. The shooter blew through the side door of a school, killing eight and nine-year-olds and three administrators, all in their 60s. The only reason the shooter did not kill more people was law enforcement broke in and within 15 minutes had cornered the shooter and shot them. The shooter does identify as, or has, it has been reported, identifies as transgender. That doesn't excuse anything. That doesn't make the crime less horrible. It makes it what it is. There are obviously mental health issues involved, and it is a horrible thing. Of course, the opportunistic right wing of this country, first of all, are absolutely opposed to any infringement on the real cause of these type of shootings, which is our unfettered gun access and gun violence. And they are opportunistically using the fact that the shooter was transgender to attract all transgender people and to frame all transgender people in a position of hate crime inspired individuals. And they are to the point that today, where the Biden administration recognized the Transgender Day of Visibility and made comments about the transgender population of our country being under attack, the right-wing wackos got onto Twitter and had up to 30,000 tweets under the heading of Christian children. So what they're trying to do is create the narrative where transgender people are assassins going after Christian children, and that is anybody who is sympathetic, empathetic, and advocating for transgender people are therefore Christian children killers. Which is absurd and horrible. The big voices of the conservative movement have all been part of this, from Tucker Carlson to Marjorie Taylor Greene to the New York Post. You know, they are all on this bandwagon, and they, quite frankly, see blood in the water, and they are doing everything they can to be as opportunistic about it and create more hatred that they can. So we will be talking about that. We are also going to be talking about a case in front of the Supreme Court from a graphic artist in Colorado called 303 Creative. And this graphic artist does not want to do designs for LGBTQ couples. She wants the right to put that on her website, proudly proclaiming that. And that is against Colorado's non-discrimination laws. So there are no gay couples that are trying to get her to do this or infringe on her biases and her prejudices. No one is trying to do that, but she is still driving this case up to the Supreme Court. So, like I said, we have one of the country's greatest legal minds on deck who will talk to us about all of this. That is Shannon Minter. Shannon serves as the legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. We obviously have a lot of questions for him. Before we bring Shannon on, I do want to welcome Brody Levesque. Brody is the producer of the show and the editor of the Los Angeles Blade magazine. And obviously he is watching the wire as we do the show to get all the latest breaking details. But for now, welcome to the show, Brody. How are you doing?
Hey, Rob. So here's what we've got. Former President Donald Trump has been indicted in New York City on charges related to a $130,000 payment made by his former attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, to adult film star Stormy Daniels in the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign. This money was allegedly paid to prevent the actress from publicly saying that she had had an affair with the former president. This is an unprecedented indictment, and it marks the first time in history that a former U.S. president has been criminally prosecuted. Now, this comes as Trump is facing separate ongoing investigations into his involvement in 2020 election interference by his supporters in Georgia, the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, and also a separate investigation that was launched into his handling of classified documents after leaving office. So this is just kind of becoming a pile-on for the former president. At this point, we don't have any details on the indictment that's still being worked through currently. So that's all we've got at this point. Former President Trump has, in fact, been indicted by a federal grand jury, and it is a developing story.
So, Brody, I have a question for you. One of the things in the New York Times piece that came out about the indictment pointed out that Donald Trump is already using this as a fundraising tactic with his base. Obviously, he attempted to get that ball rolling last week when he announced that he was going to be indicted, I think it was last Tuesday or whatever, and that he was encouraging his base to get out and protest, which really did not happen, like, at all. What are you hearing, or have there been polls to indicate what his base's reaction actually is going to be around this?
At this point, the polling data that we're getting, all of this hasn't even dinged him in terms of standing with, you know, his base in particular. There was a Quinnipiac poll that was just run comparing his numbers with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is widely considered to be the other forerunning challenger to him for the nomination. And there is just a huge, massive difference. Trump pulled numbers in the 70s. DeSantis pulled numbers in the 20s. So it hasn't really damaged him at all. We're still waiting to see what the party leadership is going to do with it. Privately, we're being told by some Republican leaders that they're not going to back the former president. Others have been very, very, very noncommittal. And then, of course, we've got the more rabid ones like Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, of course, is angling for a VP spot. So it's just going to be an interesting season. A lot's actually going to hinge now on what comes out of this federal action today in New York, this action in Georgia, and then, of course, obviously, the investigation into the mishandling of classified documents by the former president.
So wow. There we go.
Yeah.
Did you want to preface any of the things, the topics that we have today? You've reported on all of them in the LA Blade, which, by the way, people should go check out the stories. Everything we're talking about will be in the LA Blade, which you find at losangelesblade.com.
Well, I think the most important thing to note here is that the right has already picked up on the narrative of using the descriptor, and that's become the identifiable thing. You know, we keep hearing, you know, trans killer, and it's just an inaccuracy. We're also hearing a lot of noise about this person being a trans activist. That's patently false. This person was a relative unknown. We also, you know, are trying to get our colleagues in the media to quit using, you know, the preface of trans killer or trans shooter. It's a shooter who happens to be trans. We don't know all the details. Mm-hmm. The Nashville Police Department has not released a manifesto yet. But unfortunately, due to the circumstances of this and the fact that it's just gone completely, you know, out of bounds with it, which hasn't been helped at all, quite frankly, when you get people like Tucker Carlson, who went on the air Tuesday night and said, and I'm quoting him, you know, the trans movement is a mirror image of Christianity and therefore its natural enemy. And then, of course, Wednesday in Kentucky, the state legislature overruled the governor's veto of a horrific ban, which I'm sure we'll get into with Shannon. And now, of course, it's going to be up to, folks like Shannon and the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the American Civil War Peace Union, and others to fight. So this has become really kind of the problem area. I just did an analysis piece from Media Matters, and there's a trans teacher here in California who was targeted with a bomb threat and other threats after Fox News coverage of her, okay, in a classroom in Orange County, California. So it's we're looking at the pylon, and we're looking at an applied narrative. And I think the main focus here is to attempt to slow as much of this down and to also do some redefinition here. And we start with the shooting, you know, in Nashville. The main theme that should be remembered here, and this is really what this boils down to, is it's the guns. It's the access to the guns. So that's really where we're at with it. So I'll throw it back to you, and let's talk to Shannon.
Yep. Yeah, I've got a bunch of other questions, but I do want to bring Shannon in because Shannon probably has a lot of insight into it as well. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you. I want to kind of change the whole subject up front, though, before we get started, because I know you've been dealing with something that is kind of a byproduct of global warming, a whole other issue. But you just recently had a huge personal tragedy with a tornado in your home, and I wanted to check in and see how you were doing.
Oh, goodness. Thank you so much for asking about that. Yeah, my little town got hit by a tornado, and my house, unfortunately, was one of the ones that got hit. But we're fine. All the people are fine. All our beloved animals are fine. So honestly, I'm just nothing but grateful. It could have been so much worse, and I'm just so sorry for my neighbors who also suffered a lot of damage. There were no lives lost, so that's the blessing.
That is very good to hear, and I know it's a mess, but I'm glad to hear it will be and then you'll be able to move over and get on. And I fear that a lot of our weather things are now kind of our new normal until we get a hold of global warming. But that's a whole other issue. We have a whole bunch of other figurative tornadoes hitting us this week. First of all, let's go to the big elephant in the middle of the room. What are your thoughts on the Donald Trump indictment?
Oh, goodness. I think it's just so important that this particular investigation and indictment, you know, not be seen as political and not be political. You know, I would guess we just have to have faith in the process that it's being handled as it should be. You know, I will assume that until there's, you know, some indication otherwise. This is a tricky one. I mean, the other allegations against him, especially the ones relating to January 6th, are of such gravity and so serious and so important that it's hard not to be struck by that. And, you know, this matter is very unseemly and distressing, in comparison, it doesn't seem to have the same sort of gravitas as some of the other issues, mm-hmm. you know, potential criminal issues swirling around him. But I do think it's very important that our people see that no one's above the law, and also that this is being done on a very objective basis and that it's not politicized.
And obviously this is going to be a blind question because none of us have access to this information, but in order to charge him as a felony, they have to have tied it to another crime beyond just the payback or payout to Stormy Daniels, which is complicated. In your mind as a legal expert, how comfortable would you be in this position to win that kind of case, number one? And number two, if you were the legal god, would you have had this case come first out of all of the other ones that are possibly going to come up for him?
Well, you know, I am not by no means a legal expert on criminal law or election law, so I don't have any idea, Rob. If I just couldn't even begin to tell you the first thing about whether there's a strong likelihood of success and linking it to an election law violation. I'm just in the same boat as everyone else, just watching this unfold, and I guess we'll see what happens on that front. And I really don't feel like I have any sort of informed opinion about what should be the order, you know, the order of things. If we could have some other, I don't even know if there will be other charges. So I don't know. I just would encourage everyone to, you know, we just need to all show restraint and hope and expect that our legal system will be conducted in a fair and impartial way, and that people who are breaking the law are held accountable. I mean, he was a president who did not seem to show a lot of respect for the law. And I think it caused our country a lot of damage. And I hope, you know, it's important that our elected officials be held to some sort of accountability.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. Especially when they're supposed to be the one most responsible for the Constitution and the enforcement of law. It's really a travesty. Let's pivot over to what happened this week, and what are your thoughts and concerns around the Nashville shooting and how that has unfolded?
Oh my gosh, it was just a heartbreak tragedy. How horrific. I mean, as young kids, I can only imagine the heartbreak of those families and the grief. And it just sickens me that anyone would do anything or say anything to take the focus away from where it should be, which is on that horrific loss of life and innocent kids having their lives cut short. And that should be the sole focus for all of us. End of story, period. And as Brody said, we need to do something about gun violence in this country. And this has certainly underscored that. All of the terrible politics swirling around this are so grossly inappropriate and so stomach-turning. It really is, anyone who's doing that should be ashamed. Anyone who's doing anything to take the focus off those families and their grief should really be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, of all the different shooting events that have taken place, for me personally, the one that still shakes me to my core, because my boys were of the same age as the victims in it, was the Sandy Hook shooting. I wrote about it, and absolutely, that to me is completely unimaginable. Each one is horrific. You know, Pulse obviously hit very close to home. In fact, Brendan Wolf, who was there, is a friend and been on the show several times telling about his personal experience. But to your point, the one that I have nightmares about is absolutely taking your young child to school and never seeing them again and having their lives ended that way is unthinkable. The Republican response has ranged from the high end of it has been, gee, there's nothing we can do, shrug, walk off, to all this rhetoric and the real issue behind the rhetoric and the hatred is obviously it is liable to stir up violence against transgender people, period. But also, it seems like it would fuel some of the legal things that are happening around the country against transgender people. What is your thoughts on that and observations of that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the person's identity has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with what happened, which was just horrific, forgivable act of violence against innocent children. And that's the only thing that matters about that incident. And the only thing it should be telling us, in terms of the politics of it all is the urgent, incredibly desperate need for some sensible gun control laws. There does seem to be a common thread with many of these shootings with people who have some sort of emotional or mental health issues. And we need to get serious about looking at these issues. Yeah, the lack of leadership on the part of elected officials in our country around this is almost just unbelievable. I mean, at a certain point, it becomes just incredible. And I do have to hope and believe that the vast majority of people in this country, like you were just saying, Rob, like people have kids, that people can relate to this. They don't want to have to worry about sending their kids off to school every day and the horrible thought of, like, what if this was my child and what if I never saw my child again? Like you said, though, it's a wonder to me that on an issue like that, where there is so much bipartisan agreement that we can't get anything done. I mean, I want to believe that we may finally be hitting that critical mass point where there is enough public pressure that finally there will be some action on that. I think some people on the right trying to focus on the transgender identity of the person who committed this horrible crime is just trying to distract attention from those issues. It is reprehensible. And look, we're already in an environment, as you noted, it's just, there's there's already something extraordinary and unprecedented going on this year, this past couple of years, with this just almost inexplicable focus on the part of the right on demonizing and targeting transgender people and passing a number of laws now. I think in some states, I think Texas may be one, there's literally like more than 40 bills introduced targeting transgender people. Like, what on earth? Like, that is clearly not, it's clearly bizarrely out of proportion to anything to do with transgender people. Like, what on earth? Like, I don't know how to make sense of that, except to, I think there's going to be social scientists and political theorists looking back on these few years in our nation's history and helping us unravel in retrospect what happened. What are we in the middle of here? Why is there this obsessive focus with this small minority group, less than 1% of the U.S. population, and yet attracting this wildly disproportionate number of bills and proposed laws and laws that are passing? I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, no, it's completely unhinged. And in our discussions that we've had around it, I mean, the consensus is that it is not a legal issue. It is not a social threat issue. It is a political issue. That, you know, if you look at the threads of fascism and how fascism works, it plays into that kind of methodology. You villainize a small group that are really not threatening anybody, but you make them the scapegoat and the target and create a lot of fervor and ire around it. And then you Trojan horse in all your other not issues, but your intentions to take control and to save the society from the group that they've picked out, handpicked to attack. But Shannon, from your perspective, having fought for civil rights in court, what do you think the prospects of a lot of these laws when they hit the court system? Will they stand up, or are they based on anything that has legs judicially?
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I am optimistic that many of them will be struck down. I mean, they're very extreme, especially the ones that ban medical care for transgender children. That has just never happened in our country before. Like, and it is very ironic that these bills are being put forward by conservative legislators who usually are very strongly supportive of parental rights. And here they're like literally taking a very cherished traditional right away from parents to make medical decisions for their children. And they're saying, no, the government's going to step in, take that decision away from you because we don't trust you, parents, to do the right thing for your own children. I believe that the reason we've had initial success in challenging those laws in Arkansas and Alabama is because that is such a violation of such a deeply rooted traditional right of parents. And so, we're in conservative courts in those states, and yet we have had initial success. I hope that continues. I hope that even this very conservative current U.S. Supreme Court would be loath to put its stamp of approval on such an extreme intrusion on parental rights. So I'm optimistic, but look, I'm not taking anything for granted either. These are pitched battles in the courts. I mean, these states are fighting. They're fighting dirty, frankly, and they're fighting, right, as hard as they can, and they have unlimited resources. So, and our movement is being stretched thin at this point in terms of having the legal firepower and people power to challenge all these laws.
And I am sure one of the factors that makes it even more difficult is because of Trump's 4 years And because Mitch McConnell opened the door to a ton of judicial appointments, there are Trump appointees, although some of them, they don't always fall in line because, quite frankly, a couple of them threw out his claims of the stolen election, even though they were Trump appointees. But certainly they're ones that are dangerous. How do you view that path of who those judges are, and will they make this even harder?
Well, you know, yeah, the federal judiciary is definitely bears the imprint of you know, Trump's presidency. That said, they are, I think the majority of judges, including those appointed by President Trump, most of them take their role very seriously and do try their very best to impartially apply the law. So, yeah, that's the way our system works. It's what I've been struck by over, you know, 30 years of litigating is it's just the realization that judges are just people, and they are, you know, prone to the same biases and misconceptions as everyone else. And that's the big challenge for us. No matter, you know, no matter who the judge is there's just most people do not know anything about health care for transgender kids. I mean, why would they? It's an incredibly small mm-hmm. number of kids. Unless you happen to be the parent of a transgender kid, why in the world would you know anything about the medical care? And so I can tell you, litigating these cases, it feels like this overwhelming responsibility to quickly and thoroughly educate the courts on these, you know, somewhat complex medical issues. And I feel like we've been doing a good job of that. And as long as we can, as long as, you know, we're in front of judges who are at least willing to consider the evidence, I think we will definitely be okay, because the evidence is overwhelmingly on our side. But, you know, there are some judges out there who just really come to this with a very closed mind. But fortunately, there's really not a lot of those in our system.
Yeah, well, that actually is encouraging to hear. Just because I guess from my perspective, watching what happened during the Trump years, it's like, oh, my God, it's going to be a disaster, which, of course, is kind of what I look at when I see the Supreme Court and what's happened there. And I realize that's kind of similar issue, but some cases bigger, some cases more isolated. But speaking of them, they have a court case in front of them from 303 Creative. What can you tell us about that case?
I'm really worried about it. I'm concerned that maybe people aren't paying enough attention to it, so I'm glad you're bringing it up. I appreciate that. Yeah, look, this is a case where the U.S. Supreme Court is going to rule whether or not there is a constitutionally mandated exception to anti-discrimination laws that would allow a commercial business owner who does not wish to serve same-sex couples to just be able to discriminate against them on the grounds that otherwise it would violate her right to free speech. The business owner in this case is a woman who owns a website business. She designs websites for people, and she right now doesn't even design wedding websites, but she's made it all the way to the Supreme Court by saying, well, I would like to do that. I think I would like to do that at some point in the future. But if I'm going to be making websites for people's weddings, I don't want to do that for a gay couple, because I don't believe in gay marriage, and having to do that would force me to, you know, create expression like a website that violates my own beliefs. So this would be like a free speech violation. It's a very – anybody who knows anything about the constitutional law in this area would immediately recognize that is a very outlandish claim. I mean, the court has never, ever, ever credited claims like that. I mean, the ironclad rule up until now has been like, no, no, no. If you're in the commercial arena, you have a business that's open to everyone, you cannot invoke the amendment as a license to discriminate. you have to provide your services on an equal basis to everyone. And it doesn't matter what kind of services you're providing. It doesn't matter that you happen to be selling a product that involves website design or painting signs or anything that could, involves words and speech, because a lot of businesses involve words and speech. And if we're going to create say that there's a First Amendment exception for every single product or service that involves anyone saying anything or using words or being expressive in any way, then that's going to be that's going to be a loophole that swallows the rule. So, I'm really worried about how this case is going to come out. Based on the oral argument, the odds don't look great for our side of this.
But let me ask you, because for me personally, because I am a freelance writer and I do put out my shingle for people to hire me to write for them, and I write for different websites and different businesses and everything else. If a MAGA person contacted me and wanted to do a website that was anti-trans, for example, what would my legal rights be?
Well, you wouldn't have to do it, because political opinion and expression is not a legally protected category. Being gay is. Sexual orientation is a protected category. Same thing, if somebody wanted you to design a Nazi website or something like that, you don't have to do that. But by the same token, you couldn't turn someone away just because they were of German origin, or because they're of a particular religious faith, or because of their sexual orientation, or because they're transgender or not transgender, or because of their race. Those are personal characteristics, and that's what the law – this case comes out of Colorado, and that's what Colorado law, like other states, prohibits discrimination on those bases. So it's really about, you can't turn someone away because of who they are. It's perfectly fine to decline business because you don't want to give voice to a particular political view that is offensive to you. But designing a website for a gay couple, that's not political speech. That's just, you're just providing the same service you would provide to any other married couple that wants to have a website to give the details. We're getting married on such and such date, and here's where it is, and here's our, gift list, and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. It's not like you're doing a treatise on same-sex marriage or on marriage at all. Yeah. I get it. Looking at the Masterpiece Cake case that went before the Supreme Court and that ruling, and this one, what hope or worry does that case give you in this case, reflecting on this case?
Well, Masterpiece Cake Shop was a very good decision, and it strongly reaffirmed the legal framework that has been in place, from time immemorial, which is anti-discrimination laws can constitutionally require people to treat everyone the same, and that the court strongly affirmed that. I mean, they did rule in favor of the baker in that case, but it wasn't on free speech grounds or religious liberty grounds. It was on the ground that the court thought that the Colorado Human Rights Commission that had investigated the case had displayed bias against the baker in its process of investigating the case. There were some statements made by the commission at points that the court interpreted as reflecting hostility towards the baker because of his religious beliefs. That's debatable, honestly, but that's okay, because they didn't unsettle or disrupt this longstanding framework whereby the court has just continually said anti-discrimination laws don't generally implicate, much less violate, the First Amendment. But I fear that the court wouldn't have taken this case if it wasn't very seriously interested in changing that framework. If they were just going to reiterate what they held at Masterpiece Cake Shop, you know, frankly, they probably wouldn't have taken the case. And the oral argument showed that a lot of the justices seem to be leaning towards, for the very, this will be the very first time in our country's history, if we lose, that the court articulates a free speech exemption to an anti-discrimination law.
Mm. Well, it's so bizarre because, to your point, you know, this is all theoretical. There are no gay people asking for it. It's like, it just, you know, it's kind of making a point on the heads of people that don't even want it and affecting our lives in other areas as a result. Looking at I've got a convoluted question here, which I'll try to make sense of. When Title IX was in front of the Supreme Court, it was kind of a surprise when the decision came down that Neil Gorsuch was kind of the deciding factor that upheld LGBTQ rights under that. Do you look to some of the Gary justices and see them as possibly wild cards in this?
I hope so, Rob. I hope so. You know, Justice Kagan, who is very measured and very moderate, she has expressed great alarm at some of the court's recent First Amendment free speech decisions. And the fact that somebody like her, who is so careful with what she says, has really been speaking in very strong terms, should give us all alarm, because, you know, she's not one to exaggerate, but she has described what the court has been doing with the First Amendment as, quote unquote, weaponizing the First Amendment. I mean, the court has really been using the free speech clause in particular to just strike down all kinds of laws that have previously been thought to be perfectly valid for a long time. And so that's my concern here. Like, this is part of a bigger picture where the court is just on a little bit of a free speech rampage. And my worry is this is just going to be a very tempting situation for them to expand the scope of the free speech clause yet again. I mean, I'm pro free speech, of course. That's been so important for LGBT rights in this country, and I'm super strong supporter of the free speech clause. But to say that they're really turning something that is conduct, which is the selling of a service or a business to the general public, to turn that into protected speech, that is going to radically change anti-discrimination law in a way that is going to invite so many people in the future to claim that they don't have to follow anti-discrimination laws because in some form or fashion, whatever they're selling, whatever service or product they're selling has some expressive component. I mean, I'm just concerned with how divided and polarized their society is already. This is going to open an absolute Pandora's box and invite people to start discriminating against each other on all kinds of bases, because I don't see how they're going to limit the decision only to LGBT people, which would be bad enough, of course, but I think it's going to end up applying to every type of anti-discrimination protection. And what a mess that's going to be. It's just the last thing that we need right now is an invitation to more discrimination.
So can you take us a little bit into kind of the doomsday scenario should they come down and carve this special niche for, quote-unquote, free speech under anti-discrimination? Where do you think that would end up applying, and where do you think it wouldn't apply?
Well, that part of my worry is I'm afraid it will apply to all kinds of things. I mean, you know, in Masterpiece Cake Shop, the baker described himself as a cake artist. You know, it could apply to interior design, to legal services, to selling you know, clothes. You could say that, no, I design my clothes to send a certain message. If I have to sell to a gay person or, you know, Lord help us, to somebody of a particular race or something like that, it sends a message.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to send. I mean, if you start to think about, just think about all the goods and services that we all buy every day, how easy it would be to claim that many of them have some sort of expressive component or creative component, you know, an artistic component. I mean, even painting someone's house, for goodness sakes, you could say, no, you know, I really put a lot of myself into this job and I bring my aesthetic sensibility to bear, and it would violate my right to free expression if I have to paint a gay person's house.
And should they support this case? Is this going to be mandated to all states, or is there a possibility, like they did with Roe, where they try to throw it back to the states in terms of its implementation?
No, that's the scary thing about a constitutional ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. It applies across the whole country. It will apply in every single state, and there will be nothing that states can do to get around it. You know, that's the danger here, that the court is going to say that the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution requires that every anti-discrimination law in the country have an exception for the selling of so-called artistic or expressive services.
Well, wow, that's scary. What is the timeline on this? When do you think they will have the ruling?
June. I expect that we'll see this ruling in June. And I really do hope people are paying attention. And look, we need to, if this ruling comes down the wrong way, we really need to set ourselves on fire. I mean, we need to not let this just become the new normal. We need to let the court know that people are not okay with that decision, and we need to rally the troops. And for one thing, we should be encouraging businesses to pledge that they will not discriminate against same-sex couples, even if they're now permitted to, that they will not do it. I mean, we can't let ourselves become like the, you know, frog slowly boiled in the pot, where this becomes just the new normal. Like, oh, of course it's okay to discriminate against LGBT people if you have some sort of free speech or religious, you know, objection to it. That would be terrible. And we've really got to stick up for ourselves right now.
Yeah, it's kind of goes down to some economic theory that it's a conservative one that there shouldn't be laws, but that the feet on the street, where we place our dollars, is how we vote on these things. We set up businesses that we will support and keep in business and stay away from the ones that have discrimination policies. Which kind of played out with the cake baker in Oregon a little bit, because they went bankrupt after their discrimination thing, because suppliers and all sort of, you know, consumers and suppliers did not want to do business with them based on their bigotry. Shannon, what other cases are coming up in the pipeline that we also should be watching?
People should be paying attention to, there's a case out of the Ninth Circuit that arose in Washington State, which was a challenge by the Alliance Defending Freedom, an extremely anti-LGBT group, to Washington State's law protecting minors from conversion therapy. We won that case, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed the validity of the law, rejected their challenge to it, but now they have asked the Supreme Court to take that case, and that request is pending right now before the court, and that's one to keep an eye on. If the court takes that case, that's obviously going to be a hugely important ruling for our community, and that's another place where we're going to need a lot of public support. We really, if the court takes that case, we want them to know that people are paying attention and that we will be absolutely outraged if they strike down those laws.
Yeah, that would be horrible. In terms of conversion therapy, is there any effect that, quote-unquote, free speech might have on that?
Yeah, well, this would be another free speech case. That is the claim that the Alliance Defending Freedom is bringing, that these laws that prohibit therapists from performing, you know, a course of treatment on a minor patient to try to change their sexual orientation or their gender identity, they claim that that is protected speech and that these laws therefore violate the free speech rights of therapists who want to engage in that treatment. And what the Ninth Circuit held correctly is that that's not protected speech. That's medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, counseling and therapy is not a vehicle for a therapist to express their own views or opinions. They're providing, like, a scientifically grounded, objective treatment for mental health conditions. And with conversion therapy, there's no underlying mental disorder or condition. The treatment, so-called, does not work. It's completely ineffective, and it's incredibly harmful. I mean, it puts kids at risk of very dramatically increased risk of suicidality. But you can imagine if there was some, like, medication that doctors were prescribing just for something that not to treat an illness, like the person's fine, but they're going to prescribe mm-hmm. you this medication. It doesn't do anything to help you, and it could cause your death. Like, of course we would ban that. So that's the right way to think about these laws. They're not about speech. They're about treatment. But that said, this is a court that seems inclined to view almost everything as speech. So that's going to be the challenge if they do take this case. It's going to be another one of these free speech cases where there could be some new dramatic expansion of what constitutes free speech.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. And I guess for me personally, the scariest thing is I hear rhetoric out of conservatives that is so bizarre these days and illogical and delusional. I mean, it's going back to what we're hearing out of their mouths right now around, you know, the Nashville murders is like, on every side, on the gun violence equation, on, you know, the transgender equation, on mental health, anything that they're opening their mouths on is so bizarrely out of touch to reality and nowhere near trying to solve something, but rather just really trying to promote a narrative to their advantage. So, yeah, all of this is very, very concerning and very frightening. Brody, I wanted to give you a chance to pipe in on all this. You've been alarmingly quiet.
No, I just the flow of conversation and Shannon, in full transparency, and I have a lot of conversations on, you know, different topic matters because he's one of my go-to for legal advice and for kind of giving me a pulse on where NCLR and some of the other groups are in regards to these cases and more importantly to these situations. So, and as a matter of fact, I know he's actually running late because he's got to go. He's got another commitment. Shannon, I just wanted to thank you for coming on and kind of talking a little bit about not only just the 303 creative law, which is extremely problematic and very troublesome and worrisome, but also to just kind of give, you know, an overview from your perspective into all of this plethora of anti-trans, you know, from everything on the theme to the, you know, the meme that's becoming from the right to the shooting all the way down. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Brody. And I do have to go, but I just want to say thank you so much for your coverage. The Blade has been incredible. You guys are doing such great work, and I don't take it for granted. I know how much goes into that. I appreciate you both very much.
Well,
thanks,
I want to thank you for Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on here today, Shannon. You know, obviously, historic day, and hopefully we'll have lots of people listening to this. And we've got to get a hold of a lot of narratives going on across the board. And just also thank you more importantly for who you are and what you do and the impact you've had on the LGBT community as a whole over your whole career. You know, you are obviously a historical figure in your own right. And I just want to let you know it is deeply, deeply appreciated.
Thank you for that. Appreciate you both. All right, we'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon. Thank you so much. So that was Shannon Minter. Shannon, again, is the legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. You know, Shannon has been very, very involved, absolutely an award-winning lawyer. He's been named best of on a whole roster of categories where they best of California, best of this, best of that. So well-recognized there. Shannon was also the lead counsel for the same-sex couples in the landmark California marriage equality case. So, you know, definitely has been part of our history. So that is pretty much it for today. Again, the day that Donald Trump, the first past president in history to be indicted for a criminal case, that happened today, and you can remember that when you listen to this podcast, and you will probably know more about what happens with it than we do now because we're only at the beginning of it. But I want to thank you for listening. Also, again, to Shannon's point, read the Los Angeles Blade, really top-notch journalism of the stories you want to hear about, losangelesblade.com. I want to thank Brody for his participation in this show and as editor of said publication. And as for Rated LGBT Radio, we will see you and talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!